All right, everyone, welcome back to the 16th episode Riverside of the Podcast. FM. If you're watching on video, you probably see we're kind of got a different little look, so we're trying out something new, so we'll see how it goes with this episode. But anyways, yeah, we're back with the 16th episode. Daniel's back with us, which means another college football field episode. Not a whole lot this week, but there's still a bunch of content we got to get into, so just running down the schedule for this episode, we're going to be talking more on recruiting and some drama that's come out with that recruiting this past week. And then Dawson and I was going to hit on ACC Media Day real quick with us going and attending live in person. And then we're all three of us are going to go into teams that we believe will take a step back and also a step forward this season. And we kind of picked out some different teams. So we don't have the same ones, but we'll get in that towards the end of the show. But yeah, going right into it, just some recruiting drama this week. I know on the Clemson side, it was big with Bryce Perry Wright, so I kind of want to go first with him, and then we'll go on with some of the other ones that happened this week as well. So, Dawson, I'm going to let you get right into it with Bryce Perry Wright, and then we'll go with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a battle you really weren't expecting to lose. For a long time, it did feel like Clemson was in the lead for him, and a lot of us anticipated that he would commit to Clemson. Was supposed to be July 4th, but it got pushed back a day due to an agency party in Las Vegas, which probably should have been our first sign that things weren't really going our way. And, you know, it felt like about a week, maybe 2 weeks before his commitment date, that Texas A&M had kind of slipped up on Clemson. You know, as you know, they had gotten the last official visit for him and, you know, had made a pretty good package for him that would have been hard to turn down. And, you know, a couple of days before, you start hearing rumors about Texas sliding into that spot over A&M, and you know, maybe they were being the biggest threat. And then come signing day, you know, everyone starts catching wind that it's probably going to be A&M. They put together a really good package for him. I personally talked to a couple of my sources the day of, a few hours before his commitment, and they said that there was just a package that he couldn't refuse, that A&M had put it together for him, and he really, you know, I think if it were up to Bryce, then he would have ended up at Clemson. But in this new era of football, where your money is a big deal now, your family has a little bit more say in things, I think that probably took over there. And I'm not faulting his family or Bryce in any way. I guess I would use the analogy of, you wouldn't send your 18-year-old to the car dealership by himself, you know, just because he wants something. You know, you're going to go with him and hold his hand along the way, especially, I mean, Bryce is a 17-year-old kid. He's not a grown man. He can't, you know, I think that's one thing that we have to, as fans and people who are a little bit older, is we got to take a step back and realize that you know, these aren't grown men in negotiations in the NFL. These are 16 and 17-year-old boys who are making, you know, major life decisions and talking millions of dollars. So, of course, their family is going to be right there beside them. So, you know, we don't fault him for that. But obviously, there's a line in the sand if you're Clemson that you got to draw it and you can't go past it. And that was one of them. You say, hey, we move on. You know, Clemson's lost a ton of great recruits in the past. I guess somebody I can name famously, Dalvin Cook, didn't get him. And look, Clemson was probably, you know, fine even without him. So, you know, this is just another player. We're going to move on. They're going to move on to, I don't know if they're going to go after another high-level defensive name on the line, especially. It's going to be tough to see because Bryce Perry Wright was kind of your number one option. You've got Tyler Atkinson committing probably within the next month or two coming up here soon. We'll probably find out some more information on where we stand, and, you know, we'll get it back to you guys. But other than that, I don't have a lot to say. What do you think about it, Gavin?
Yeah, so Bryce Perry Wright, he commits to Texas A&M, obviously, and he's more of kind of like a hybrid. He was kind of listed as a defensive tackle, but Daniel, I was talking before we started recording, he only weighs like 250 pounds, so you can kind of do what you want with him. And then another thing I liked, what Daniel told me before we started recording, is he thinks that Texas A&M did some recruiting pitch with the whole Von Miller, what's his other name?
Miles Garrett.
Yeah, Miles Garrett pitch, along with the bag of that package that you were talking about, Dawson. So Texas A&M ends up grabbing them. And then whenever you was texting me saying that Texas started getting into the mix, I was like, dang, now we're fighting two Texas teams. And now looking at the commitment of Bryce Perry right to Texas A&M, I also kind of think now with us getting Dre Quinn, was that more of a bigger win than we thought it was?
You certainly got to feel like it. As we know, Texas put a lot into Dre Quinn. If they didn't feel like they really wanted him, to be honest, they wouldn't have felt so confident going into his recruitment. Everybody knows it. All the Texas insiders were predicting a huge win for Texas there. And a lot of on-three guys were too. But around Clemson and around circles, we kind of had the feeling that we were in good shape for him, and we got him. So, yeah, now looking back, hindsight being now, and, you know, us being able to look back now and say, hey, we lost a guy now to one of those schools, it would have been real easy for us to go 0-2 on Dre and Bryce Perry Wright. So maybe we ought to be a little thankful that we did get Dre Quinn. And, you know, we did, you know, we aren't bare at defensive line. We did get a couple of guys, you know, Dre Quinn included, some elite players. And, you know, hey, who knows? Bryce's recruitment is far from over. Signing day is not until December. So you've got the next couple of months to make your pitch. I know Dabo's not really big on poaching guys, but it's just not the era we live in anymore.
Yeah, that's what you got to do nowadays. But, Daniel, I want to hear your side of things and what you think about the whole Bryce Perry Wright situation that went down this past week.
Daniel, you're on mute.
There you go.
Like I said, man, I think this was a guy that Clemson really couldn't afford to lose. My speculation right now on Tyler Atkinson, I know we're still – a while out from his commitment, but I think he's right now more of a Georgia lean. That's just my speculation, my viewpoint on it from an outside. And I think if you're a Clemson guy, you have to think of what happened. You sold the program just as best as you could do it, but in the end, it came down to the bag. I think Clemson, towards the end of his commitment, when he was talking about that A&M is a D-line U, I think Clemson is D-line U, in my opinion. You've got guys like Christian Wilkins. You've had first-round draft talent, you know, Austin Bryant, Dexter Lawrence. You know, the list goes on and on. And I think that if – I know that the bag as an entice as a high school kid is very enticing because you have the millions and the millions of dollars. And when it comes down to two programs like this, you can either take a bigger bag and go to the bigger program and play against – higher competition and stuff like that, or you can take the lesser bag, kind of bet on yourself and go where the development has been proven and basically concreted and solidified to where that teams that are going to draft a defensive lineman out of Clemson know what they're going to get. Like when guys are going to TJ Parker is going to be high on draft boards. Peter Woods is going to be high on draft boards because they have developed into great defensive linemen. And I think Bryce Perry Wright would have been a great Clemson Tiger going in with Nick Eason and Chris Rumpf. But I think that even with rev share, it is going to be hard to beat some of these teams because you're never going to get it evenly in the bag for some people, or the money is more enticing than playing for the program that you really want to play for.
Yeah, speaking on D-line U as well, we've seen some little action on Twitter going on. Daquan Bowers, Clemson great, and also he helps out with the football team now, but he posted on Twitter after Bryce Perry Wright committed and said that comment about D-line U. He said, "Ain't but one D-line U, check the records, hashtag all in." So I kind of want to hear y'all's thoughts about that tweet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got a guy like that who is a former player and an assistant here, kind of voicing his opinion. And, you know, you've seen that previously. I remember a couple of times last year when Clemson was dealing with a whole meltdown in recruiting where guys were jumping ship. I can't specifically remember the coach, but I remember a couple of guys posting, take the road less traveled, and, you know, letting it be known they're putting kind of their feelings out on that. And, you know, one side of you really, really sits back and just wonders, you know, what did we do to lose them? You know, as far as a culture, what can we do better? What can we do better in a package to land more guys like that? To where, you know, like there's multiple examples, Bryce Perrett included, Dave Sanders, guys like that, who say that Clemson was their dream school, and they grew up loving Clemson. They would have probably committed to Clemson in this pre-NIL era, but now we're living in a different world to where we're not landing guys like that anymore. And you're always thinking, what can you do to get past that? And then the other side of the coin would be, say, hey, we got to move on. You know, they just weren't for us, and there's a reason. You know, if they want to be here, they'll find their way here somehow. Jeremiah Alexander in particular, who was, you know, basically a Clemson lock up until he came back home one weekend to Alabama and flipped there. And, you know, look, now he's back at Clemson. So obviously we're not ruling out the fact that these guys couldn't make their way back to Clemson in the portal. You know, we're we're push come to shove. You know, we don't wish anybody, you know, negativity or bad play on another team. It's certainly not a guy like Bryce Perrett, but if things were to go bad, you know that when he hits that portal that he was already a Clemson fit. Dabo feels it. The staff feels it. So there would be no reason not to, you know, maybe give him a phone call if we're in the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, you make a great point, Dawson. Even if we don't get these guys, like you were saying, still building those great relationships, still recruiting them really well, and then showing them what Clemson can offer. Yeah, if they go to a different school and then maybe things don't work out, perfect example, like you were saying, Jeremiah Alexander. Peter Woods is high school teammate, and then he ends up hopping in the portal out of Alabama, and bam, he's still the perfect fit for us. He's going to be playing for us this year. And that's another thing I kind of want you to talk on, Daniel, is what you hit on all the time is saying really nothing's fulfilled until pen hits paper, and even after that, stuff can happen there as well.
Yeah, Gavin, I really I don't think this Bryce Perrett story is over. I think there is a very good possibility that he could still be – because his recruitment – usually when you're lock solid in your commitment, you really post right after that, you know, my recruitment is 100% shut down, not entertaining anything else, done. This is where I'm going. This is why. That wasn't put out there. And I'm not saying that he isn't locked down or anything like that, but it hasn't been publicly declared that – he's locked down. But I do think that with the era of college football that we are in, the NIL era, but not only the NIL era, the transfer portal era, Bryce Perrett could very easily go to Texas A&M for 1 year and put his name in the transfer portal. How many guys have we seen from these previous A&M classes that go in for 1 year, enter the portal, and the next year they're somewhere else? You know, that's not a shot at any of these guys that go to Texas A&M or these guys that enter the portal, but how likely is it that he ends up in the portal? And how likely is it now that Clemson is in the portal if they stay on him? And even if he doesn't end up at Clemson based off of high school, but how likely is it that he ends up at Clemson through the portal?
Yeah, it's a good possibility. I mean, we see now that Dabo will use the portal, and obviously the person has to fit, but also team needs. Like you've seen last year where we had a couple of defensive linemen decommit. We go get Will Helt this past year, and then also a linebacker, we go get Jeremiah Alexander. Same thing with wide receiver, you go get Tristan Smith. So it's all just based on program fit, obviously, but also what the team needs as well, position wise. All right, so anything else you guys want to add on the Bryce Perrett situation from this past week?
No, I'm tired of talking about it. It's been weeks of talking about Bryce Perrett and writing about Bryce Perrett. Now all of it's in the trash, so no, we're totally ready to move on.
All right, yeah, so we'll put that to rest. But that's kind of the only real Clemson recruiting news. But now we're kind of shifting over to our friends in Columbia, and there's two names that we're going to get into. But the first one, and I think a real big one from this past week, was Julian Walker committing to Michigan. So, Daniel, I'll let you take off with that one, and then we'll go into it.
Julian Walker is a loss. I really would have liked to see, you know, Dutch Fort, Irmo kid. His dad was on the staff at one point. I would have really liked to see him stay in state. And we did lose one out of our own backyard, and makes me look foolish for what I've said about how good that we recruit the in-state talent of South Carolina, which I think that it, you know, if you don't want to be in South Carolina and you don't want to play for the University of South Carolina, you know, it could be a scheme fit, could be a number of things. Could be you didn't want to play for your dad on staff, or you know, there's a lot of speculation that it could be, but the reality of recruiting is you have to move on. You can keep recruiting them. If their mind changes, they will end up at your university. The bigger loss for me is the other guy that we're going to get into in just a couple minutes, because he was set in stone until 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes before recruitment, before he committed. And I really do think that South Carolina, I think, finished second or third in Julian Walker's. But in the interview, I've seen the screenshots on Twitter, and I don't know if it's because if he was on staff at the time or if he was fired previously. But if you have a coach on your staff that are, I understand it's your son, but if you're on staff at a collegiate university, you cannot be on record going to another school and being like, I love how you do this here. I could see my son playing for you, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That can't happen.
I think also going out of your way to talk about how great Michigan was to also, because, you know, not to put it out there, but I am in some Gamecock chat rooms, and, you know, I kind of put my name out there sometimes and just listen to what you guys are up to down there. Those guys were pissed. They were really upset about it. They were really upset. And I agree. I totally agree. I mean, if our strength coach or an assistant coach visited another school and then started raving about how great that school was and how they were the standard, yeah, I hope they'd be fired. And somebody said, what was he supposed to say? My answer to that would have been nothing at all. Literally nothing at all. Don't talk about it on record. I mean, that is a terrible look. You can say, look, hey, this is my son's decision. I'm glad he's enjoying this recruiting process, but I love where I'm at. I love South Carolina. That's what you're supposed to say. But one thing that I do want to talk about his recruitment is I was kind of reading up on it and talking to some people about it. Julian actually considers himself from the North rather than here from the South. He's only here because of his dad is at South Carolina. He's a Wisconsin kid. He actually grew up watching the Badgers a lot. And he said what wowed him about it was watching Michigan in that, you know, 2013 to 2017-18 when they had what's his name? Played multiple positions. He was a high Jabril Peppers. Was Jabril that Peppers, it?
Yeah.
I believe he raved about him, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure you know, watching those other guys out of Michigan, watching some of the later guys get picked now is probably what made him fall in love. He loves being up from the North. That's what he claims. You know, he talked about he does love South Carolina. It's always going to hold a place in his heart. But if I am Shane Beamer, and I think I'm not sure yet, but I would assume that the strength guy is no longer on staff. I'm not sure. I don't know if he will be in the future, but I would assume that you cannot keep letting now Julian as a committed player to Michigan. I don't see how you let him into your staff rooms anymore, even if his dad is a coach, or you let him into the facility, because, you know, that's just a direct, that could be a recruiting violation. You've got a committed player for another team sitting in on meetings and workouts with South Carolina, and who knows, he could be influencing or, you know, tampering with already locked in guys at South Carolina, getting them to hit the portal. I think that's just too big of a security threat. If you're Shane Beamer, you just can't let that go on in your building. So I don't know how they're going to handle that. And another thing is it doesn't send a very good message to recruits out there who are considering South Carolina to say, man,
it's the worst message possible.
Yeah, I mean, like he doesn't even want to go to that school. His own son doesn't even want to be at South Carolina. So why should we be at South Carolina?
As a coach, man, if you are a coach and you are on staff, and I get it that you want to support your kid and that you want to talk good about the staff, which you can do that in so many other ways, in the ways that these screenshots don't show, but you cannot, and you cannot make your program look less superior than what it was. And that's exactly what the screenshots look like it did. And if he was out recruiting and this is how he was recruiting, you know, there's something that a lot of the way that you talk about your program is the way that other people are going to see your program. So if you talk like you're top of the line, there's a lot of people that are going to see you as top of the line. But Michigan was what last year? 7-5? 8-5? Is that top of the line? For Michigan standards or for Big Ten standards? No. Not at all. And people that go around saying, you know, oh, you're going to do great. You can say that. You're going to do great things. But the way that you raved and the way that, you know, basically – you applied for the job without applying for the job, basically. You know, it's that can't happen if you're a coach, and it's so frustrating that that's what happened.
Yeah, like I get, obviously you're proud of your child, like making a big time commitment, but whenever it's to another school, and you know you make those comments about that other school when you're a coach at a different school, at another high caliber school, like y'all guys are saying, like, that just can't happen. I mean, you can say certain stuff, but just what you were saying, Daniel, like, none of that can happen.
Which, allegedly, you know, I don't want to say he was on staff, but I don't want to say he was on staff, but allegedly you were on staff and you were talking like this.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for the Clemson people, if we can kind of compare it to our own, imagine if Joey Batson's son – Okay, I'm going to imagine if Matt Luke's son, who is a, you know, pretty coveted recruit right now, who has now earned a Clemson offer, imagine if he were to go out of his way and commit to Georgia and then Matt Luke go on record of saying, man, Georgia, I miss being there. They do it differently. They hold their team to a different standard, and that just is a phenomenal place that sets the bar high. We would be really upset about that. I'm sure Dabo, if he wasn't fired, he would have a strong conversation with him whenever he got back into Clemson.
I don't think he would have a job. All the good that you do, all the good that you do will never outweigh something like that.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example, Dawson. That's basically the equivalent of what happened in that situation. But yeah, if that were to happen with, you know, we're making an example with, like you were saying with Matt Luke, I mean, you couldn't help but just have to get him away from the program. No matter how good of a coach he is, like, that just can't happen.
And not to get off topic here, but to kind of relate our, you know, how powerful words are, how about Thomas Castellanos? I know we didn't put it in the outlines, so we kind of forgot about it, but man, sending that kind of message a little over a month before you play Alabama, especially when you were benched at Boston College, what are we doing? I mean, all three of us played football. We understand that. You know, there's a fine line between being confident and looking cocky and, you know, poking the bear, as they'd say. And if I'm on a team and my quarterback says that, who's a transfer who had to battle his way to get to this spot and is talking like that about a top-level team that we're about to play, he's going to have a swift conversation in that coach's office. And I'd be willing to bet he already has. I'd be willing to bet they're probably going to shut down his media access, or at least the team's media access, until the season starts. And by that, I mean, you know, exclusive interviews. I don't mean ACC Media Day, but
you better show up.
You better come ready. Because, you know, Alabama's got that plaster on their walls already. And so do all the ACC teams. Now that he said he ran through the ACC, I'd be, you know, very surprised if, you know, for Clemson, if Nick Easton and those, Tom Allen, those guys aren't, you know, hounding that, telling them that every single day, you know, especially leading up to that game, to say, hey, this guy thinks y'all are bums. He's going to run through y'all. So I think, you know, Thomas has put a huge target on his back, and I would be really excited to hear what he says, if he even gets to go to ACC Media Day in a couple of weeks, what he's got to say about that comment if he's asked.
Yeah, I get that. Obviously, maybe if he was a quarterback there all of his college career, maybe he could say that, but whenever you're transferring in from Boston College, of all teams, to Florida State, and then you automatically think, oh, I get this title just because I'm the Florida State quarterback. Yeah, he was benched at Boston College, and that's really not a good look. And then you're coming into Florida State whenever you're about to play Alabama first game of the season at Bryan Denny Stadium as well. That just is putting a big red target on your chest.
If you're Norvell, that's the last thing you want. You're already kind of on the hot seat. Disappointment last year. And the first thing that happens is your starting transfer quarterback, maybe the starter. I don't know if he is going to be the starter or not, but got to get through fall camp and everything. But if your starting quarterback comes out and just paints a big red target right here on your chest for the whole season, and this is kind of a make or break season for you, I promise you that conversation in that coach's office isn't going to be a good thing. There's a fine line between confidence, arrogance, and cockiness, and you can't mix the three. You're one of the three. And that came all very cocky, very arrogant of, and I think Alabama is going to roll in week one.
Yeah, Mike Norvell's already got enough problems, and that just creates an even bigger one with what he was saying.
I think almost that kind of shows the bad side of a transfer portal attitude. A guy that's really cocky just thinks he's everything. And I mean, look, we don't know this guy personally. We've never met him, but that being one of your interviews and that being the thing that gets out, a lot of people are going to make presuppositions about you, and this is one of them. I mean, this is what comes with the job. Could you imagine if Tristan Smith were to come out and say, oh, yeah, these LSU DBs are horrible. I would run circles around all these guys, and we're going to, I'm going to be better than everybody else in the country. And everyone's going to look at him and say, you what? A transfer from SEMO? Really? It's kind of how they're looking at Thomas Castellanos right now, just saying, what? The bench quarterback from Boston College?
If he doesn't show up, it's going to be a long year. He will never hear the end of it.
And I mean, this is obviously a long way off, but if he has a shot at the NFL, they're going to be going over that, time and time over again. That's going to get brought up in every one of his interviews, because NFL teams will eat stuff up like that. They want to test your character. They don't care. It doesn't matter if he does go out and light a fire this year and shreds Alabama and, shreds the ACC like he claims. That's still just a extremely cocky remark from an unproven player at this point in his career.
Yeah, no matter what, he's going to have to face that. I mean, he can try and, push it aside for all he can, but like you were saying, Dawson, even after college, those NFL scouts and even those NFL reporters, whenever you show up to the combine, they're waiting to ask you hard questions to see how you'll react to that. All right, so moving back into our conversation, now I want to talk on P.J. Dean. He was crystal balled to South Carolina, but ends up committing to Georgia, so see Daniel shaking his head, so I'll let you go on with that, Daniel.
20 minutes. All it took was 20 minutes before the commitment, and it flipped. And
yeah, a lot can happen in 20 minutes to pick up what Daniel was saying. For me, I think what – just to give my input on it real quick. For me, what I think changed is just an undeniable package that Georgia put out there. He got a call probably right then, and I can just imagine Kirby on the phone, and I've met Kirby before in a limited capacity, and I can just imagine, hey, what's it gonna take? What we want you to be a Bulldog right here. What's it gonna take? I can just imagine that conversation and how that went. And I can only feel so bad now for Steve Wilflong. That looks bad on him. But honestly, things like that happen. He can't help if a guy just flips. Stuff, things happen. He was a Gamecock lock. Everybody knows it. And Georgia makes a last minute call, and all of a sudden he's a Bulldog. So I think that's a little out of his power, and I think people do need to calm down on blaming these insiders, because truly is, things do change. That's just how it works. We don't live in the same world we did 5 minutes ago.
Darren, do you want to continue?
Yeah, he was definitely a cock lock before 20 minutes. Actually, it was the same NIL deal. South Carolina and Georgia had the same exact NIL package. I confirmed that with somebody that I've talked to about it, that they followed it through and everything. I do think that it had a lot to do with his brother that recently played at Georgia and got drafted. I think that had a lot to do with it, but I don't think his recruitment's over. I think we got a long way to go from here.
Yeah, with all of these guys, I mean, you hit on it time and time again. I mean, it's never really done until pen hits paper, and even if that. But, yeah, Dawson, like you were saying with Kirby Smart, just from, like, the locker room talks I've heard, like, that's got released to him, like, you got to think he's a real convincing guy. And like you were saying, I could just see him now. What's it going to take for you to be a Bulldog? And that's what it looks to seem what happened in that situation with P.J. Dean.
Yeah, definitely. I met him whenever he was, you know, in a heated battle with South Carolina and other teams like that, recruiting Jordan Burch. He actually came to Florence, and you know, a lot of us met him then. And yeah, he's an intense guy. And this was, you know, quite a while ago. You know, coming up on 6 years now. But I mean, I his intensity isn't changing. You know, he's still that same fiery recruiter that he was back then.
He's 100% the same fiery competitor. Everything. I do think that the recruitment isn't over until pen hits paper. I think we're going to stay on him, and I still think that if he I really do think that if he does go to South Carolina, he will end up – or if he does not go to South Carolina, he will end up a Gamecock at one point in his career.
Yeah, so we're waiting to see if anything else happens in the recruiting world. It's definitely been a crazy week between the likes of Clemson and South Carolina and their own ways of recruiting. But now kind of shifting some gears over to Clemson media stuff. So Dawson and I will be attending the ACC Media Day on Thursday, July the 24th in Charlotte. So I know Dawson and I is ready to get up there and just get right at it. I know obviously we'll be there for Clemson, but also North Carolina will be up there with old Bill Belichick and then some of the other ACC teams. I have to check back. But Dawson, I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on what's going to go down in Charlotte when we go up there.
Yeah, I'm excited. It'll be my first ACC Media Day, and I think it's yours too first, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I haven't been to Charlotte probably since December in the with the ACC Championship game. So I'm going to bring my Tecovas. They got a Tecovas store there. I love it. Love getting my boots clean there. Probably going to eat some good food. Going to meet some good people at the conference. And hopefully, you know, let's, you know, find out what we can find out. Collect good data. Communicate with people, you know, really be able to build relationships. And I mean, at the end of the day, just enjoy it. I think that's what a lot of people don't take away from these things is, you know, this is fun. This is a gift to be able to do this. And we don't want to lose any second of it. We don't want to take it for granted. So, you know, while we're there, you know, obviously we're there in a work capacity, in a professional sense. We're also there to have fun a little bit, you know, and enjoy the moment. Just soak it up and say, hey, football's right around the corner.
Yeah, I know for me it's a dream come true, no doubt. Just I've seen it happen year after year with the ACC Media Day. But like you were saying, I mean, I feel like it's an opportunity to connect with people. I mean, obviously there's a whole lot more media out there besides Clemson media. I mean, just guys from different schools. And it's always good to connect because you never know who you're going to meet and you never know who knows who. But the day we're going, it'll be Boston College, Clemson, Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Virginia Tech. So a lot of solid schools. Seeing if we can hopefully meet Bill Belichick, like I was saying, and then also NC State with Dave Doran. He's always a good little character to hear from. But and also Virginia Tech and Duke, Boston College. Those are all good schools for that day. But, yeah, we'll be there for the last day of it, which is Thursday. But, yeah, I'm excited for it. Kind of going to make a day trip out of it. But, yeah, we'll see what goes down in old Charlotte.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah, congrats to you guys, man. I know that's a dream come true for both of y'all. Congrats to y'all.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I'm the same as well. I haven't been to Charlotte since the ACC Championship game this past year. So, good to be back in Charlotte, and I'm hoping we can go back to the ACC Championship game this year and do it all over again. But, yeah, we'll see. So kind of just wanted to hit on that real quick. But, yeah, kind of just our last little segment, and we'll go each of us with this. So teams that will take a step back and a step forward this season. So I know we've all had our own list that we've made with separate teams. So who wants to go first? Dawson, you want to go first? Or you want Daniel to go first? Or I can go first? How are y'all going to attack this?
Gavin, I'm going to let you go first here. I'm still If y'all didn't know by now, we're having some technical difficulties and my computer's loading, so I've got a lot of my notes on there right now, so I'm going to try to hold off as long as I can.
All right, yeah, I'll go first. So I did three for each, but I'll just get right into them. So for a step forward, I got the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. They went 7-5 this year, but they get another year with Hayes King. I was looking at it today with their ACC schedule. They got a very favorable ACC schedule. I know we play them at Georgia Tech this year, and, I mean, they're looking like another scary team. I've hit on it time and time again, saying how there's always a team out there that Clemson drops a game two in the ACC, and I believe that Georgia Tech's that number one for us, and even Louisville probably being 1B, so Georgia Tech 1A and 1B. But, yeah, I got Georgia Tech's taking a step forward this year after their 7-5 season. And they also about beat Georgia this past year. I know they went back and forth in overtime, but that's something else to keep in mind. And then another team I think will take a step forward this year is the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They went 6-6 this past year. They get another year of Patrick Mahomes Jr., Dylan Raiola, another year with him. And I was also looking at their schedule. It's a very manageable Big Ten schedule. There's a couple tough games in there, but I feel like they can kind of go up from a 6-6 season. So we'll see that there. And then my last team that I think will take a little bit of a step forward this year is the Florida Gators. Another year with DJ Lagway at quarterback. They do have a tough SEC schedule, but once again, like I was mentioning with Nebraska, I do feel like it's very manageable. They have all night games in the swamp this year. I don't know if y'all knew that, but they have all night games in the swamp, which I think is kind of crazy. But anyways, so I got Florida as another team that I think will take a step forward this year. So before I go into my step back teams, is there anything that y'all would say about my list for the step forward?
I like it so far. I could probably make an argument to support yours on all three of those teams. I like Nebraska. I think Matt Rhule is a really good college coach, especially we've seen it in a – especially his year three is normally his biggest jump. You've got Dylan Raiola, who I think is a phenomenal talent. Florida, again, Billy Napier, guy that was really seemed like he was on the floor, ready to be counted out last year and was able to pull some magic. You know, DJ Lagway was able to really come on the scene and be the quarterback that everyone thought he was. And they didn't give up at all, so I'd be willing to bet they're going to be able to ride that momentum from last year into this upcoming year. And like you said, hey, they're playing a lot of games at night in the swamp. That's a tough place to play. And then again, you said Georgia Tech. I could Yep. totally get behind that. That staff there is phenomenal. I don't think a lot of people understand how difficult it is for them to have a full scheme change and in this short of time be a successful team. Running the triple option and heavy run offense and then in 2022 and then flipping in 23 into that more of a air raid offense, into that more modern spread offense. And really in 2023, they had a very solid season. And then 2024 came along and they kind of stayed at that level, you know, getting a little better. And you saw at the peak of what they can do is, you know, they're 2 yards away from beating Georgia in the rivalry game. And now mm-hmm. you got them in 2025. And I hate to say it, but, you know, that's going to be a really tough game for us. You know, we got LSU, then we got Troy, who is no walk in the park. And then we got to go to Atlanta on that early road test at Georgia Tech in that very tough stadium, Bobby Dodd. So I'm definitely not looking forward to playing them early. But so far, I'm loving it.
I can agree with two out of three of those. I think Georgia Tech is definitely a sleeper for a lot of people. LSU, Troy, Georgia Tech. If Clemson can survive those three, they will be in the ACC championship game at the end, and it will be in the playoffs. The question is LSU and Georgia Tech. I really think Georgia Tech is going to be one of those down-to-the-wire, grind-you-out kind of game. Haynes King is tough. You can hit him every way possible. You know, pile driver. He's going to get back up. I think. What was it against Georgia that he was playing with almost broken ribs and stuff like that? Like, just he'd been bruised, battered, about all you could say, and he was there. I agree with you on Florida. I think Florida is going to turn it around. I do have my concerns with Lagway, but I think Billy Napier has really resurrected Florida, because there was a lot of people last year that wanted him gone until the Ole Miss game when they beat Ole Miss and Jackson Dart threw, I think, 3 or 4 picks in the last minute, 2 minutes. I disagree with Nebraska. I think Nebraska is going to kind of stay there. Nebraska has, even with Scott Frost, they could not win one possession games. And that's not a skill that just comes naturally. You have to play in them all the time and keep losing them. But is this the year that they finally start winning them and get out of that 6-6, 7-5 hole? I really don't think so. I think it kind of stays the same.
Gotcha. So now with my step back teams, I'll say the last one, the best one, the last one. So my first one is SMU. They made the ACC championship game last year, obviously. I think they kind of take a step back. They do have a tougher ACC schedule this year. They do have to come to us to play us in Clemson, and then they also have a couple other ACC teams that are very gritty this year. And then also I was looking at their schedule, and they play Baylor at home and then go to TCU at the beginning part of the season. So those are two kind of tricky games besides the ACC schedule. So I think SMU kind of takes a step back. I know they have Kevin Jennings still, but just a little tad bit tougher schedule this year I think will kind of get in the way of them. Now my second team, the Georgia Bulldogs. They went 10-2 last year. Gunnar Stockton is now the quarterback. If you remember that playoff game, I don't know, he was kind of iffy to me. But another thing I've been looking at with this is schedule. Georgia goes to Tennessee in week 3, and then the week after they play at home against Alabama. So in those 2 weeks, that's a tough schedule, playing at Tennessee, then at home against Alabama in the first 4 weeks of the season. Then my last one, me and Daniel kind of had a debate about this before we started recording. Alabama, they went 9-3 last year. Now they're without Jalen Milroe. They're going to kind of have I know they got Ty Simpson and maybe another guy at quarterback. And then this is another year without Nick Saban. I know we were talking about Nick Saban and Kalen DeBoer, but I feel like whenever you still have to have Nick Saban coming to the building recruiting players, it kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit, but I'm not going to – I can understand that, but I think you just got to give maybe Kalen DeBoer a little bit more time just to let him figure out some more stuff at Alabama and get all of his guys truly in there, because there are still some Saban guys in there. But, I think Alabama might take a slight step back this year, but nothing too drastic, in my opinion. Those are my three.
I like the Alabama, and I like the Georgia, really. I could agree on that. You know, I talked to a Georgia fan over the weekend at the lake, and he was not a Gunnar Stockton believer at all. You know, he wasn't he is totally expecting to take a step back. I was actually defending Georgia a little bit just because how much I believe in Kirby Smart, but I understand it. As Clemson fans, we know it best how hard it is to stay on top of the college football world for such a long period of time, and I guess that's kind of what everybody is just so appreciative of what Nick Saban was able to do. And this is not to say that Georgia's about to take a massive fall off, but I definitely could see them taking that big step back and, you know, really having to go through a, you know, roster changeover like a lot of teams have had to do. But, yeah, I mean, those two teams, I really love those comparisons.
How big of a step back?
With all three of these, it's not a drastic step back. It's maybe another loss or so on their schedule, but nothing too serious where they're like losing 4 or 5 games.
I think 4 to 5 games on – it's still Georgia and it's still Alabama. I don't know if you can say that's 4 to 5 games. Yeah. I can see them losing 2 to 3, but, slight step back, but I don't see a full-blown major step back.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, they're still going to be the same teams, but they're not, I guess, to the caliber that we've seen last season. But, so, Daniel, I know we had kind of had a debate on Kalen DeBoer and Nick Saban, so you kind of want to talk about that, too?
Yeah, man, I think you got to give DeBoer more time. It's Nick Saban. I understand he's the greatest college football coach of all time, but Kalen DeBoer, even before he got to Washington University, was a winner. Then he got to Washington University and was a winner and took a team led by Michael Penix to the national championship and got them there. I know a lot of Bama guys are used to like immediate results and immediate this and immediate that, but I really do think that Kalen DeBoer is your guy. You just have to be patient with him.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I know how Alabama fans are. They're ready for that immediate impact. Playoff appearances, national championship appearances, national championship wins. But I do agree you have to give DeBoer more time because he is a winner like we've seen in years past.
Now, if next year isn't the same, I think we can then have the conversation. If they're not in the playoffs by next year, I think you have to have the conversation of did we hire the wrong guy? I think you have to give him this year full trust, and then if you're not in it this year, you can go into next season being like, okay, do we pull the trigger? Do we wait?
Yeah, I agree. All right, so that's my list. So, Daniel, do you want to go next? Dawson looks like he's still working on some stuff.
Yeah, so the teams that I'm up on, I've got just two that I'm up on and one that I'm really down on. I got Texas Tech that I'm up on. I think Texas Tech and Joey McGuire are going to be a really good team in the Big 12. You know, he's really a player's coach. And if you – I don't know if anybody really was paying attention in the media this week. They made news. They got a 5-star offensive tackle, which me and you were talking about earlier, kind of how the contract would work, because I think it was 3 years, $5 million guaranteed. Another guy that they got was Donovan Webb, 4-star safety, beat Michigan out for him. That's big for Texas Tech. Usually, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of guys that want to go play for Joey McGuire, and a lot of these guys – from Texas, you know, that may not have offers from A&M or the Longhorns and all that kind of stuff, will go play for Joey McGuire because they want to play for Joey McGuire. So I'm really high on Texas Tech. I think they're going to be really good this year. They are in the Big 12. So, you know, you've got teams like Iowa State and Baylor that are going to, you know, be there and maybe give them a push. But I think Texas Tech could be a dark horse to win the Big 12. I think Micah Hudson's back too, even after all the controversy that happened. Michael Hudson's very talented. Second team that I have that I'm high on is Iowa. I think Iowa is going to be very good. I think they're a dark horse Big Ten team. I really believe that with Mark Gronowski coming in from South Dakota State, basically won the Heisman in the FCS, started over 40 games. I really think that Iowa is going to be a good team this year. If they can improve on the offensive side of the ball, they're always good on the defense. Can they improve more like they did last year on the offensive side of the ball? The team that I'm down on, and this is going to be a shocker to you guys, I'm very down on Penn State. How many years and years, since the Saquon Barkley days, we have heard that they're national title contenders. They're going to be there in the end. They're going to be there. Just trust us on it. And they're not there. Why is this year any different? Why do we give James Franklin the pass that we give Brian Kelly that he can't win big games? James Franklin, in his time at Penn State, has won over 100 games and lost like 40. But versus top five teams, he's 1-18. 1-18. Why do we continually give James Franklin that pass? Do you trust Drew Aller to deliver you a national title? I don't. I don't at all. And especially when he lost his top target from last year, you're going to lean on the run game. But I don't believe in the throwing game. I think the defense is going to be fantastic because you poached Jim Knowles. But the offensive side, I have questions. And I don't believe your head coach can win the big game.
Yeah, that's a good list. I'll go with your teams up. So Texas Tech, I've always liked Texas Tech. They've always been a gritty team. They're going to do well, I think, this year in the Big 12. And like you were saying, I think they're a dark horse to win the Big 12. But, yeah, I do like the Red Raiders. And then with Iowa, man, it always seems like there's year in and year out, there's always a Big 10 team that just comes up out of nowhere. I mean, we've seen it this past year with Indiana. I think Iowa can be that. And I'm not saying maybe making the playoffs. I don't know. We'll see. But I do think Iowa is on the up and coming this season. I mean, they just got a great program over there. But now going into Penn State, and I think that's a really big one. I'm going to say I agree with you. I mean, James Franklin, we've seen it year after year, never able to win the big games. And, I mean, Drew Aller, I kind of seen some, I guess you could say, some question marks about him last season, especially in the big games and in the playoff. And then, like you were saying, his top target's not there anymore. And then I'm not too sure about that run game. So there's kind of a little bit of question marks with me for Penn State as well. I know people are high on them this year. But, yeah, I just feel like they have to prove it before they can actually get the recognition that they're getting this year.
I cannot get on the Penn State downgrade bus at all. You know, Daniel, first of all, though, by step back, where do you rank step back? You know, how many are they dropping compared to this year?
I mean, I think they lose to maybe you've got to think, if you're a Penn State fan, what are your expectations? This year, what are your expectations if you're a Penn State fan?
National championship.
Or bust, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll say that.
If you don't make it there, again, this is 10 to 11 years of the same thing. Would you not start asking yourself, are we not as good as we think we are? What is wrong in this picture? You can't have national title hopes for 11 years and not make it once.
I still don't know if I would, like, I just don't know if I can get on the idea that this would be a step back year if they didn't win a national title. Winning a national title is hard. It's really hard. I mean, they were probably a bad pass away from making it to the title game this year, if we're being honest. So that just tells you that there's a couple of plays that just don't go their way. And James Franklin, I know we like to rag on him, and I like to rag on him too, but honestly, I think he's the most perfectly rated coach in college football. He wins the games he's supposed to win, and he doesn't win the games he's not supposed to win. You know, sure, he doesn't get it done at the biggest stage, but honestly, no one's calling him the best coach in football. You know, we're calling him a really good coach, maybe elite, but we're not calling him the best coach in football. For him to, you know, put Penn State on the map, you know, especially after everything that has gone on with that college in the last 25 years, he brought those guys from the bottom level of college football, essentially, now to, we're even talking about them being a national title contender not all that long ago after they went through a scandal and, you know, stuff that puts your program to death, really. Even the fact that we're speaking about them going to the national title or saying it's national championship or bust, here we are with James Franklin talking about a coach that really took a big flyer on a program that was in a bad spot, a bad way. I can't say this year that I believe they're going to take a step back. I just can't. They've got a ton of great guys back. They replaced losing one of the best defensive coordinators in the country by putting the best defensive coordinator in the country in their defensive slot. Drew Aller, I agree, Gavin. There are some question marks for me, but, I mean, still at the end of the day, I think he's probably the second-best quarterback in the country, if not the best. It's probably between him and Kay Klubnik, and I'm going to give him that based off of his measurables. And I know that, you know, we always don't like to look at measurables and let that be the best story. But it does, to be honest. It really does. So I would put Cade Klubnik at one, put Drew Aller at a close second. So I think if Drew Aller can just be good this year, then they're going to be right in the same spot as they were last year. He doesn't have to go out of his way to be a superstar. He just has to play within that system. And they're probably going to be fine. They're probably going to still be in that semifinal talk. But other than that, I can get on board with those other teams. But Penn State,
I don't think they made the semifinals.
Really?
I don't think they made the semifinals.
Who really beats Penn State in like a first round or a second round game?
I think you say, who do I think would beat? It depends on where they're seated at. It depends on where Penn State is seated at, and it would depend on who's in the playoffs. But there's a lot of teams head to head that I would pick over Penn State. I don't
like
think
who?
Penn State. If Texas and Penn State played on a neutral field, I'm giving it to Texas. Ohio State and Penn State play on a neutral field. Ohio State went to Penn State last year and won.
But for you to say that they probably wouldn't make it to the
Oregon.
Semifinal, that would imply that those two teams fall in the same bracket side to where they're that close together. That would mean
I think
Penn
there's
State
a lot
would
of,
have to have a well, a 6 to 7 to 8 seed year, and Ohio State would have to have a 2 or 3, or they could be a 4 and a 5, which I still I think in a world that is possible to where Penn State, because I'm going to give Ohio State, if they were to match up together again, or if they were to match up in that Big Ten championship, then yeah, I could see a world where they're 4 and 5, but and that's obviously based off of if it was a straight seeding in their conference tournament, but I don't see a world where Penn State and Ohio State are having to duke it out in the first round. I just don't, because that would imply that the Big Ten champion is one of the worst conference winners because they would have that 4 seed. I can't see a world in which that happens. I just can't justify it.
Disagree. I was saying regular season. Ohio State went to Penn State and won. But you got to think, look who's in the Big Ten. You have Ohio State. You have Oregon. And then you have the other teams that can beat you on any given Saturday. Do I think that Penn State is a good team? Yes. But I don't think that they are national title contender worthy, because you haven't proven that you can even get there. You haven't played for one. We give James Franklin the pass, or why do we, that we don't give Brian Kelly? You realize that, right? The grief about Brian Kelly is that he can't win big games. Nobody says that about James Franklin.
Brian Kelly has not been on the same level as James Franklin in the last 5 years.
I don't disagree. But I'm saying that the standard, if James Franklin loses a big game, is, well, it's James Franklin. He doesn't, basically of, next year he'll get them. If it's Brian Kelly, you hear about it for the next week and a half saying that Brian Kelly lost another game that he should have won.
You want to know why? Because Brian Kelly coaches in the SEC, and everybody gets a pass if you lose a conference game over there.
Very true.
Alabama lost to Vanderbilt and lost to Oklahoma, and people were still trying to drag them into the playoffs. That's why.
Fair.
Fair point. Very fair.
But I do agree with you on the fact that we should hold Brian Kelly to that same standard, because Brian Kelly is supposed to be a high level coach in college football, and he's at probably what is the easiest coaching job in the world, right beside Georgia, maybe. LSU is littered with talent. It's littered with money. It's littered with history. I mean, heck, Ed Orgeron won a national title at LSU. And, I mean, not to talk bad about Ed Orgeron, but what much he had to do that year at LSU. They were just loaded. We could have gone out there and called plays, say, okay, Jamar, Justin, go deep. Joe Burrow's going to find you. That's basically the playbook all year long. So that's just a proof that if you're at LSU, there's talent every single year. And they have a bit of a – this is – Penn State fans are not going to want to hear this, but I think LSU's got a better history in the last 30 years than Penn State does. They just do. LSU didn't have to go through a scandal that Penn State did, at least to the extent that they did. And they were in a – I think James Franklin was in a tougher spot than Brian Kelly was coming into that job. And I know Brian Kelly is – he hasn't been there that long, but we're starting to kind of wonder about him now, saying, hey, what are you going to do? You left a lifetime job that you had at Notre Dame to come to this bigger program that promised you the world and you haven't delivered at all yet. You know, what are you going to do this year? If you drop this game to Clemson and you don't make the playoffs, I think things are going to get real uncomfortable fast up there in LSU or down there in Baton Rouge.
Very quickly.
All right, Dawson, you got your list ready yet?
I do, yes. Okay, finally, right. My computer is ready to go and I'm ready to roll. And I'm going to say one word and Daniel's going to hate it. So my first team that I've got, I'm going to start with teams that are taking a step back, the South Carolina Gamecocks.
I mean, you know what happened, right?
I have totally taken out my bias on this, and I'm just going to give you straight factual information. Number one.
Step back is what?
Step back as in I think they will win 7 games this year, which would be a step back. They won 9 this past year. I think they'll win 7, maybe. I think they could win 8 or 9, but I don't see it. Number one reason, loss of production. You lost a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball. You had one of the best defenses in the country, and you failed to replace a lot of that, really. You didn't have the portal success that you had the previous year. Losing Kyle Kennard is going to be a thing that I think a lot of South Carolina fans aren't going to be willing to admit is going to take an impact on Dylan Stewart. And as Clemson fans, we saw it with T.J. Parker. T.J. Parker's freshman year was electric, one in part of his talent, two in part was they had a nasty defensive line in 2023. Xavier Thomas was on the other end of the ball. They had a ton of guys that could rush the quarterback. And you saw in 2024 where, you know, Clemson decided not to go out in the portal and get a guy. And they said, let's move Peter Woods over there. Game two, it fails. Peter Woods goes down. And now TJ is really your only rush threat. And he had a really quiet year. I understand he still had double-digit sacks, but for a large majority of the year, it felt like he had a bit of a quiet year and was struggling to get back there and struggling to really perform well for a lot of the year. And I think you're going to see that same effect with Dylan Stewart now that he doesn't have Kyle Kennard on the opposite edge. And I understand we've talked about before that South Carolina probably feels good about the roster they have. And, I mean, sure they can, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of question marks. You know, sure, you've got a lot of guys that you feel strong about, but can they give you the same production that those other guys did? Can your opposite defensive end give you double-digit sacks? I don't think so. So now you're going to have to look for that those numbers. You know, you're losing Nick Emenwori. I actually like a couple of guys South Carolina's got in the secondary. Collier especially, you know, he was really great in coverage against Clemson whenever TJ Moore caught the ball over his head and when Antonio Williams did the same thing. But other than that, I do like a lot of the young South Carolina secondary. But again, they're losing a lot of guys. TJ Sanders, Tonka Hemingway, Nick Emenwori, Kyle Kennard. These are big names you're replacing with. And number two, I think that offensive line is still a work in progress. They struggled a little bit, to be honest. They struggled a lot last year. That's the whole reason Sellers was on the move so much. And you're kind of, with that line, you kind of look at Sellers and you see him doing all this, and it makes you forget about the O-line. It makes you put it to the back of your mind because you see that Sellers can get away from this stuff. But say he gets sacked a couple of more times this past year, then you're having a totally different conversation, and you're saying, man, we can't protect him at all. And I was at the spring game, and I understand it is a spring game, and there's not a lot to take away from it, but it looked a lot like last year. And truly, I think if Sellers ends up playing some teams that can really tackle well and now have film on him, he's going to have a lot of problems getting out of that pocket because a lot of his runs were scrambles. They were not intentional. A lot of them was him having to run for his life, you know, and defensive players getting out of their lanes because they're seeing a quarterback move. But still, that shows a lot about your pocket presence, and it really exposes a secret that you guys can't block very well. You've added some depth from high school, and you're hoping to develop some guys, but there's not a lot of guys on that line that you can say that you really trust at the SEC level right now. And number three, this is going to kind of sound weird, but the depth at quarterback kind of makes me wonder what would happen if you end up in a situation where Lenore Sellers goes down. I know you have Aaron Nolan. I know you've got the freshman, from
Cutter Woods.
Man, what's his name? Yeah, I know you got Cutter Woods, but there's not a guy that you've had there for a long time that I believe is an experienced guy with the scheme like Lenore's would be. And another thing is, you got not Chip Kelly, but you got Mike Shula now. What is that offense going to look like? Sellers especially asked for him, so you know, I guess if you're a South Carolina fan, you trust your quarterback. But what is the offense going to look like now? Yeah, yeah. Where's the continuity going to be? Because again, you're going to find out about Faison's eligibility this week. And I think with a lot of South Carolina fans, is you're probably not looking at a positive outlook on that just based off of the time that it's taken. You lost Rocket Sanders. You're not going to be replacing him. You got a couple receivers that you probably do like, but at the end of the day, you're going to be relying on a lot of freshmen to step up and make plays, like Murphy from Irmo, who I think is a great player, wide receiver, 4-star. I think he's a great player, but I just don't know if he's ready to step in that limelight. You know, you do have Nick Harbor, who you're probably expecting to have at his serious year, you know, maybe a draft year this year. But I still have questions about him, to be honest. I think he's a little faster, Adam Randall, if I'm being real. I really do. I don't think he gets great separation. I think he does have good ball skills, but his separation is questionable for me. And then you've got Mazio Bennett, a good friend of Tyler Brown's, who I'm really impressed with. But to be honest, a lot of it is still continuity and working out a new offense. And another point that I want to say about South Carolina is they got a tough back end of the schedule. They're going to run through a lot of tough teams. It's going to be week by week. And that's just going to be tough on their depth. And, you know, for my final look at them is I got them, maybe a 7-win team. You know, at worst, I think they'll win 5 or 6. That's a bottom level, and their ceiling for me is another 9-win season. But yeah, that's my number one team for taking a step back. My number two team, I've got Colorado. We don't have to speculate on it. We know they're losing Shadur Sanders, and they're losing Travis Hunter, and I mean that's a lot of production right there. And their O-line, I'm not really sure, has gotten much better. We saw a lot of instances these last couple of years where you've got Shadur Sanders running for his life and making these highlight throws. What is it going to look like when it's not him back there? They lost a ton of guys who played on offense and defense that I really don't think that they replaced a whole lot. The offensive line, like I said, has a ton of holes. The defense is going to kind of have to rebuild. They're going to have to look for new guys who they pulled in from the portal. They're really going to have to hope assimilates and, you know, builds continuity with their team. And obviously, I think they've got a little bit of a tougher schedule. I believe they're playing teams like TCU, Iowa State, Utah, Kansas State. And truthfully, I looked at their recruiting rankings earlier, and I know this is for 26, but they are struggling to recruit. You're not going to have a shot at a Big 12 championship if you cannot recruit well, especially in that conference. So I think they're going to take a huge step back from what they had. You know, my number three team on struggling teams that I think will take a step back is Tennessee. I'm surprised none of y'all said that yet, because obviously, number one, you're losing Nico. You swap quarterbacks with Joey Aguilar, and let's just be honest, Joey Aguilar is not a special quarterback to me. He played us when he was at App State, and oh my gosh, it was bad. And honestly, I don't know if he's going to be their lockdown quarterback so far. Another thing, Dylan Sampson's gone. He was an elite player. The O-line is kind of getting remade too. They're losing a lot on offense. But, you know, I do want to say is I think Tennessee fans mentally are going to be okay when they take this step back, because they respect the crap out of Josh Heupel. They respect him for taking them to places that they haven't been in quite a while. They respect him for standing by them, and they respect him a lot for how he handled the Nico Imelava situation. Again, their defense is solid, but it's not all the way there. They're losing. They did lose James Pierce, which was an extremely talented player, and they got a tough schedule in the SEC. I do think they're probably not gonna make the playoffs, but you know that's just unfortunately that's just one of those teams now that I think will take a step back. So now I can be positive here. Now I can talk about the teams that will take a step up. Oklahoma, because they have to, not because there's just some magic wand out there that's going to make them, but they have to. I mean, Brett Venables is really counting on this. He's taking over the defensive play calling, so I think they're going to get better as a defensive team because he is, you know, obviously coming from Clemson, that was his specialty. So I think they can only go up from there on that. And how about John Mateer? He's bringing his OC with him, and I think if we were to look back a couple of years ago, we would have never expected John Mateer from Washington State to have to save Oklahoma this year. But here we are. They added a ton of portal players, adding a really good running back. So I think, nevertheless, this is a, for Brett Venables, this is a you better step up kind of year, or else they're going to start having some weird conversations over there. And as we all know, if you go to your alma mater to coach, they will never love you the way you love them. They never will, because it is a business. And if Oklahoma were to indeed take a serious fall off this year, which is very possible, but if they do and they part ways with Brett Venables, that is a bad situation that you never want to be in. And here's my second team is I'm going to go with Virginia Tech. They got Kyron Drones back. I really love him. They got a new staff there. I know you're shaking your head, but hear me out on this. Kyron Drones has the tools to be a elite quarterback in college football. Philip Montgomery could unlock his ability this year and really be able to put it on show. They've added a couple of good transfers, and again, much like Brett Venables, Brent Pry is in a do-or-die situation at Virginia Tech. Those people are dying to have some good football back up there. And I think with the new college football game coming out and everyone getting to see the Sandman entrance, there's a lot of young fans that didn't know of a time when Virginia Tech was like that, and probably still don't because they haven't been good. But now you've got that game kind of putting it in everyone's minds that, hey, this is what Virginia Tech looks like when they can field a really talented team. And truthfully, they've got an extremely underrated fan base that, you know, if they have another game, or if they have another year where they win 6 or 5 games, then, man, it's going to be tough for Brent Pry to kind of sell his plan for them, especially with a guy that they believe in, which is Kyron Drones, which is a guy that I believe in personally. And you're going to see that on stage, on the bright lights on Labor Day weekend first game of the year against South Carolina. You're going to get to see it. So there's my, South Carolina take a step back, and there's my Virginia Tech take a step forward. So to vindicate me, I'm asking Brent Pry, please win, you know, please.
That's your early pick.
Huh?
That's your early pick.
Yeah, that's my early pick. You know, it's probably going to change in a couple weeks based off what fall camp does, but I'm asking you, please, Virginia Tech, if you can hear me, win that first game. So for my last team, I kind of went back and forth on this, and honestly, it was a really tough decision. But I am going to go with the NC State Wolfpack. To me, CJ Bailey, I can't get enough of him. He's a great quarterback. And look, for all the smack we want to talk about Dave Doran, he's kind of always had a little spot, hadn't he? He's kind of had Dabo's number a little bit, you know, although, you know, it being a tough run for him for a long time, they nipped us in 21. They, you know, had a rock fight with us in 23. And I think that they have a shot to really propel themselves in what is a weak ACC this year. And again, it goes back like the biggest thing that I'm basing this off of is CJ Bailey. I love his play. When he played against us, I didn't really think it was so much that he lost the game, that the fact that they just were not very good around him. So you're going to have CJ Bailey in his second year as a starter. You're going to have Dave Dorn, who's kind of getting to reload his pieces, and another guy that's probably got a lifetime contract up there in Raleigh. And so that's my final team. Judge free, both of you.
I'll go first on Colorado. South Carolina, but Colorado, I do like you pick them there. Obviously, no more Shador, no more Travis Hunter. But Deion did get two pretty good quarterbacks. You got Kedon Salter from Liberty, and then you got Julian Lewis as well. Those are two really good guys, in my opinion. Dual threat quarterbacks, kind of trying to replicate Shador, I guess you could say. But I do see where Colorado does take a step back, though, obviously, losing a bunch of talent. And I don't know, I just feel like Coach Prime's got to pick it up a little bit on the recruiting trail. And then I do like your Virginia Tech pick, Dawson. I feel like people are waiting on, especially people who's followed college football forever, I think they're waiting on Virginia Tech to become good again. I mean, Enter Sandman at Lane Stadium, whenever that place is packed out. I know you remember it's a couple years back whenever we went to Virginia Tech on the road night game, and I think that might have been the year Kelly Bryant was quarterback. I could be wrong.
2017.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's whenever they were pretty solid, and, I mean, that place was packed out. So I do think Virginia Tech does take a step up this year. We don't play them. And then also for NC State, I could see it. And it's going to be weird because we don't play NC State at all this year. I don't know if you knew that or not, which I think we should play them every year. But anyways, I do.
Y'all aren't playing the Textile Bowl this year?
No.
Wow.
The ACC's kind of messed that up. But, yeah, we don't play them this year. But I feel like if we did, that would be another game I would point out as, hey, this is another game that might give Clemson some trips up, because that we would be in Raleigh this year because they played us at home last year. But, yeah, those are kind of like my thoughts from your list. Also with Oklahoma, I do feel like it's a do-or-die situation with Brent Venables. I mean, I know you're being head coach, but I do like that he's taking full reins of the defense. We know what he can do with the defense, so maybe him doing that, I feel like could be a step up for them, and maybe it's something that they do need for him to do, is to take over the defense. But that's pretty much it with my opinions from your list.
I'm not going to go all over.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Not going to go all over your ripping South Carolina stuff, because in a lot of ways that me and you agree. I think South Carolina does take a step back. I don't think that they win. I don't think it's seven games. I think it's maybe eight games. You know, maybe one more that they're supposed to win, that they're not, you know, that they're not supposed to win. I have a lot of questions about, number one, the Mike Shula offense. If it looks anything like it did against Illinois, I think you're going to have a longer season than you want to have. It just, number one, your defense couldn't get off the field against Illinois. They just could run the ball at will. I think the defensive production is a very big deal. Guys like Kyle Kinnard, guys like Demetrius Knight. I do want to ask you guys a question, though. You bring up the Dylan Stewart. He's not going to have as productive a season. You bring up the T.J. Parker example. Were you guys still getting pressure on the quarterback even without T.J. getting back there? Or was it more of there was a significant decline because T.J. wasn't getting back there?
No disrespect at all to Kay Denhoff and Jaheim Lawson, but it felt like there were ghosts on the other side of that line, man. It just did.
The game, I really think about the Pitt game this year whenever he was getting pressure on the quarterback.
Well, that's just kind of the way that I was thinking of it. Of, you know, if you have one guy that's going to get chip blocked and you have guys that are going to get double teamed, do you have the guys that can win one-on-one situations? And I think maybe with the guys that we have on staff that can develop these guys, I think they have the chance to. They have the possibility to. They're going to get a couple of games to really try it. Virginia Tech, if Virginia Tech's going to be back, all I ask is that they take the first week off. You can do as well as you want the rest of the season. Just take the first week off. Anyway, I like the Oklahoma pick. Lincoln Riley really left Oklahoma in a dumpster fire when he took Caleb Williams and went to Southern Cal, and it was just brutal of what's happened to Oklahoma ever since. I like the Tennessee pick. I think the Tennessee pick is a very underrated pick. Josh Heupel was one of the best coaches in college football, one of the quickest offenses in college football. But, man, with the Nico saga, you know, your starting quarterback and different guy, different production losses, I don't know how you can overcome that. I think maybe three losses, four losses for the Vols this year. Like you brought up earlier, they're playing Georgia week three or week four, whichever week it is. You know, they are home, but that's still a tough game. Kirby versus Josh is always a good game. I think everybody knows that. Overall, it's a solid list. I like the Colorado pick. I think Colorado takes a significant step back with no Travis Hunter and no Shador to fall back on. I think it was a good list, though.
Yeah, I agree.
One thing, Daniel, I do want to hit before, I guess, you know, we're probably getting close to wrapping up. If you think that South Carolina wins 8 or 9, and I think they win 6 or 7, what are the game that you think that they win that I probably am guessing that they're going to lose then? If we're off by one game there, who do you have them beating that I would have them losing to?
Okay. If you want to go game by game, I think they'll beat Virginia Tech first week. I think they – hold on, let me pull the schedule up here just so I'll know.
Yeah.
SC State – I think they beat Vanderbilt and they start out 3-0. They got Missouri at home, or excuse me, Missouri on the road. That's a tough game. Eli's always had our number. It's a coin flip. I can't pick that one. I'd have to see the first couple weeks of the season. But if I'm going to go early on, I'm going to give it to Missouri, home field. Eli's had the number. We got lucky last year and got in the end zone with like 18 seconds left against them. Some people call it skill. Some people call it luck. I call it both. Got Kentucky. With the way they looked last year, I think at home, I think you start out, that would be what, 4-1? Then October rolls around and you have LSU at LSU. That is a loss 9 times out of the day. LSU, you lose. I think you beat Oklahoma. Alabama for me is a coin flip.
I'm not sold on Oklahoma yet.
I'm a fall Oklahoma. I think we beat Oklahoma. Alabama's a coin flip. I can see it going either way. I think it's a tight game in the fourth quarter, and one team's going to make a mistake. I think lost to Ole Miss. You beat A&M, you beat Coastal, and you beat Clemson.
I don't have you beating A&M. I don't have you beating Clemson, obviously.
So. Go figure that me and you disagree on the Clemson game.
Well, look, hey – let me just. How old were you? How old were you in 2013? The last time you guys beat us at home.
I know we've never. Mostly in my lifetime, I've never seen it happen at Williams-Brice, but I will this year. 12 o'clock kick too. That's
stupid. All right. Yeah. No, I love the 12 o'clock kick. I think it's great.
I know you do.
We can get in and get out, and probably not have that many. Not that many issues.
Yeah.
You win, there'll be issues. I promise.
Is it going to be like a, you know, if we end up going to that game together, is it going to be like a situation like last year at Clemson where I told you if South Carolina lost, you were just going to have to walk back?
I wish
Daniel 5 days to get home from Clemson, by the way.
I really wish we could throw the picture up that I got of him and one of our other good friends right after it happened. It's the best picture I've ever taken in my life.
It's not that good.
Anyway.
Yeah, we still got a long ways till the end of November, but it's always good getting some Clemson, South Carolina talk in. But, yeah, anything else you guys want to add for this episode? This was a jam-packed episode. I know we didn't have as many segments, but, man, we had a bunch of content. But, yeah, anything else you guys want to hit on before we check out for this episode?
I'm good. I've said my piece.
Just appreciate you guys having me on, man. A lot of fun every time we get on here.
Yeah, man, of course. And I know maybe next week, I don't know, in a couple weeks or so, we've been working on some stuff behind the scenes for a special episode, so I won't say anything yet until it's fully confirmed, but just keep on checking up on social media for some updates on possibly the next episode of the Tiger View podcast. But yeah, that's pretty much it from my end of things. But yeah, Dawson, anything you want to add on that, or no, you want to keep that kind of quiet for now?
All I got to say is it's probably someone a lot of you know. You guys will for shufo know it or love it. So, yeah, that's it.
Yep, that's all we're going to give you. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. We're going to wrap it up here. But it's been the 16th episode of the Tiger View Podcast. And as always, go Tigers.